Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning. Christmas Eve Day, and here we are. We'll be talking with Daryl Johnson again about terrorism.
Yes, my
typical
cousin Tino
Christmas
here.
Type of topic.
Right.
Last week we had Daryl on the show. Daryl was a analyst for the Department of Homeland Security. And Daryl, in the early days of the Obama administration, I think it's like March 2009, he issues a report, and one of the things the report says that with the election of an African-American president and the Democrats returning to power, there'll be a right-wing resurgent. And so people are listening to that, sent around mostly to law enforcement agencies. Somebody leaks it, and the next thing we know, we have a whole firestorm. And the result of that firestorm of criticism, it perks from the really extreme right into the talking head extreme right into Congress. And there's all kinds of charges. As I said last week, if you actually read Daryl's report, which is on the internet, you'll be surprised because almost nothing they say you could twist some of things that Daryl said, but otherwise it doesn't even sound like he's doing anything. So Daryl, are you there today?
Yes, I am.
Well, we've got one of our writer researchers, Gary LeMaster, is here. He's the guy who writes descriptions of the shows and additional material, supporting material on the internet for us on our website, bvid.org.
Good morning, Daryl.
Good morning.
So, Daryl, last time we talked about what happened to you, which you're one of a whole series of sort of, to us, on Democratic perspective, games run by Republicans. They forced out Van Jones. Forced out Shirley Sherrod. They forced out you. They forced out, they turned Solyndra from a sad case of us losing better technology than anybody else in the world had into this scandal that didn't exist. They stopped Susan Rice from becoming Secretary of the State. But today we wanted to shift and actually ask you not what happened so much to you and your report, although that's relevant, but we wanted to ask you what should we be looking for? We have a lot of questions. I think Mike wants to start out with a question for you. We want to go to the substance of all these right-wing groups perking up.
Yeah, the connection. And we touched a little bit on this last time we talked, but we talked about going from Obama got elected in 2008, going from 149 of such groups that you identified. And when we talk about these groups, we're talking about hate groups, extreme groups that tip over into violence. That went going from 149 to 600 at Obama's election, the first time. And here we are with Obama being reelected. And so we want to talk about it. You know, I'm not sure that a reasonable assumption might be that, you know, okay, he's going to be president for 4 years, like it or not, just, you know, kind of calm down is that happening? Is there an acceptance of this, presidency, or is there still this reaction to Obama's reelection?
Well, I think that, everything that we experienced back in 2009, the anti-government agitation, the economic downturn, the immigration issue that was hotly contested, all of these things are still at play here in 2012. I don't think anything has really changed. So I believe that the, you know, potential for violence is still there. I think the anti-government agitation is still there. And we have groups that continue to proliferate and recruit.
Maybe we should start out by asking, when we're talking about these groups, terrorist groups, who joins them and why do they join them? You know, maybe we can just kind of reset the table again with that.
Sure. The one thing that's unique about this phenomena, domestic non-Islamic terrorism, is unlike Al-Qaeda, where you have a centralized organization structure, you've got a leader, you have terrorist operatives that receive direction from a group leader. In the case of domestic terrorism, these groups operate are basically adhering to a concept called leaderless resistance, which means that people should not join groups because law enforcement may have infiltrated it. And so they encourage self-training. You go out, you learn how to build a bomb yourself. You may work in concert with a close friend that you know has been vetted and can be a trusted individual. And so you have leaderless resistance, which emphasizes lone wolf-type tactics. And you may get a small cell of individuals that are close together, like we saw in the Viper Militia case where you had, you know, some people that joined a group together. So that's a very important phenomenon to understand, is the difference between how these groups operate and how an Al-Qaeda group operates. And it's much more difficult for law enforcement to identify those people who are on the cusp of violence because they operate according to this leaderless resistance strategy.
That's huge, yeah, because I'm used to the Southern Poverty Law Center, you know, and their publication and where they identify these hate groups and they describe them in depth and the way they've brought them down is through finances, or at least limited their capabilities is through lawsuits. But boy, this leaderless thing is pretty scary. This encouraging the lone wolf thing, that's tough to defend against.
It is, and I was so concerned about it that I actually uploaded on my webpage, dtanalytics.org, a help page where people can go and look at a list of potential indicators, things that, you know, your friends or family members, if they're, you know, espousing this extremist rhetoric, some warning flags that you can kind of look at to see if this person may be on the verge of something more sinister, such as criminal activity or violence.
So the problem is there's a difference between talking hate and joining one of these really extreme group. Say they're claiming Muslims are taking over America. It may seem to them ordinary people completely ridiculous, but the rhetoric is so violent, the conspiracy theories that they generate so vast, but that's still legal, right? It's when they go from hating Muslims, say, and to actually setting a fire at a mosque.
Right.
How do you predict that, Daryl? Or can you predict it? I mean, that's too big a question, but...
Yeah, you can't really predict it from a law enforcement or intelligence standpoint unless you have someone that knows this individual and how they've, you know, escalated the rhetoric and started talking about violence. So that's why it's very important for family members and neighbors and friends to, you know, kind of keep... you know, a pulse on what their family members who may have extreme views, you know, just pay attention to those. And those are the people that will know whether it's crossed the line and has become more concerning.
So there's a role for just ordinary citizens. We listen to this rhetoric. We know somebody. The rhetoric is extreme. They're storing arms or whatever it is. They're
right.
Training themselves. But it's not up really to the government. In some sense, the government has a role, but it's ordinary people who need to look at people who are really, really hateful, and they're the ones who will have the best, you're saying they're the ones who will have a best predictor of what's going to happen.
Right. If they've seen a major change in a person's behavior, let's say, you know, the rhetoric is now taking on more of a violent tone, or let's say, you know, they hadn't been stockpiling weapons and explosives and now they're preoccupied with doing that to, you know, to a level that's abnormal for their normal routine. So you're looking at major deviations in people's behavior.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit scary, though, I have to admit, to think that you need to, you know, I want to say spy on your neighbor, but that ordinary citizens become the first line of defense against right wing hate. We want to mention that we're talking to Daryl Johnson here for the reason that he has written a book, actually for several reasons. But one of the reasons is that your book is called Right Wing Resurgence, and your subtitle, right? How a domestic threat is being ignored by law enforcement, or at least by the government. And we want to talk about, you name some groups in that book, Daryl. So let's get some names here. What kind of groups, what are the names? Now, we talked about individuals just a second ago, and now we're wanting, but it's a lot easier to just discuss groups. At least the ideology that flows from the groups to these lone wolves that may or may not carry out some of the violence. So what are some of these groups?
My question first is, or what's the hate of the day? Where are the hate groups arising? I mean, is it anti-Muslim, anti-Jewish, anti-black, anti-whatever? I think that dovetails with what Mike's asking you. Where is this? What's going on broadly?
Okay, and I just want to make one last point when you talked about spying on your neighbor or spying on your family members. You know, law enforcement doesn't necessarily need to be notified in a lot of these cases. Family and peers can intervene and talk to the person, say, what's the source of this agitation? You know, why are you feel a sense of having to go out and buy, you know, multiple assault weapons and, you know, stockpiling and hoarding and things like that? So there's a role that family can actually intervene and try to defuse and de-escalate the situation, try to get the person to stop radicalizing and to come back towards, you know, more of the center, more of the norm.
Sure.
Now going to your question, what types of groups should we be concerned about? The main groups that we look at are organized into movements. So we're talking the white supremacist movement, sovereign citizen movement, militia extremist movement. And within those movements, you have different groups that, you know, have had histories of violence, such as the Aryan Nations. Okay, we recently saw in the news that the Aryan Nations is trying to regroup and reestablish a compound up in Idaho. They're looking for property. They want to move families in and have an insular community up there. You know, there's other types of groups along the lines of Aryan Nations, such as, you know, the World Church of the Creator. You know, you had the Aryan Brotherhood, groups like that. From the sovereign citizen standpoint, we had a major group that was across the country called RUSA, and in fact, they had an Arizona chapter. RUSA stands for the Republic of the United States. This is like a shadow government that has its own courts, its own elected officials, and they're trying to undermine you know, our federal government because they believe that it's that it's tyrannical and that it's not a legitimate form of government. But RUSA right now is going through a major restructuring because its president, Tim Turner, who lived in Alabama, has been arrested and charged with a number of tax evasion and other types of white-collar criminal activity. So they're kind of in a state of disarray, and I believe the Arizona chapter has kind of broken away from RUSA and is basically operating like its own entity out there called the Republic of Arizona. And then, of course, there's many militia groups. We talked about that on your last show, how to kind of categorize the threat from them.
You know, we just survived the end of the world last week. And
congratulations to us all, by the way.
Yeah.
The folks were still all here. Unless there's this giant government conspiracy that is hiding the fact that the world ended on the 21st.
Well, I heard that there's now some people saying that the Maya misinterpreted, and it's actually December 13th of 2013. So we may be continuing to live through this whole thing again. But the reason I bring it up is how do you distinguish? You know, there's a lot of people that have been out there prepping. It's, you know, we even have television shows on prepping where they're stockpiling weapons and ammunition and food and everything else. How does, when we talk about neighbors kind of keeping an eye out for potential threats, how do you distinguish between a prepper and somebody who is actually a threat?
Well, I think it has to do with what type of prepping activities they're involved in. If it's just stockpiling food, I mean, I think there's a lot of wisdom in being prepared for natural disasters or being prepared for, you know, maybe you get hurt on the job or maybe you lose your job for an extended period of time to have money saved up and things like that. And, of course, you know, from the self-defense perspective, I think it's, you know, I advocate, you know, the Second Amendment right to own a gun. But when it becomes hoarding guns and hoarding ammunition and beginning to cross over that line and justifying, well, in order to protect my food supply, I'm going to have a fully automatic weapon instead of a semi-automatic, or I'm going to have to booby trap my yard, you know, in case somebody, you know, the police tried to come in and take my guns away. So those are the types of things that I think cross the line and become more concerning. And, of course, if they have an escalation in any type of rhetoric or they're showing signs of mental illness, when paranoia or derangement or delusion start to take over and they start making calls for violent action, those are all red flags where family members need to get involved and perhaps, you know, get the authorities involved if this person's belligerent.
What about the impact of the potential gun control legislation that we're looking, potentially looking at after Newtown? I saw a story yesterday that a military or a weapons supply company had sold 3.5 years worth of AR-15 magazines in 3 days. What do you see with if there is a real serious movement to control high capacity magazines or semi-automatic weapons? What do you see happening with these groups in that event?
If there's any kind of gun control legislation that's proposed, unfortunately, it has the potential to agitate these types of groups that would, you know, probably translate into increased activity and perhaps increased violent attacks. And the abortion issue is another one, an immigration issue. And this has been one of the things, the gun control in particular, we saw chatter on that back in 2007, 2008, when Obama was running for president. A lot of rumors circulating that there was a gun ban that was imminent, that Obama, once he became president, was going to immediately pass legislation to start seizing people's guns. And, of course, we haven't seen any of that until recently when we had the Newtown shooting, where we're starting to discuss this issue. So yeah,
it was quite amazing for a candidate and for a politician that never mentioned guns ever that to have this reaction. It was really just an excuse to, I think, anyway, to vent some hate.
There is a gun industry, folks out there, and they were analyzing guns. And the problem with a gun, from the point of view of selling a gun, is that guns last forever and can there's no planned obsolescence. And so a gun can last for almost forever. You can always get it repaired. There's guns working over 150 years ago still work today. So you have to have a constant threat and to constantly try to convince people to buy more bigger guns and more ammunition, or your sales will drop. So there is a component of just making money out of scaring people about gun control.
The election of a black president has never been better for weapons manufacturers.
One of the going back to the groups, one of the groups that I think you got in trouble for was a group called Christian Identity. And just to make clear, because it was misinterpreted as simply those people who identified as Christians, but it was an actual organization with capital letters called Christian Identity. And now this is one of those groups that seems to be on the borderline between just a group of like-minded people coming together. This is America. This people are allowed to do that. And now, do they have a violent history?
Well, there's aspects of Christian Identity which basically dehumanizes certain populations of people, particularly Jews and blacks and other type of minority groups. So the fact that they dehumanize, you know, Jewish people to the point that they don't consider them to have souls, okay?
Wow, yeah.
So they dehumanize them to the point where they're basically equated to animals. You get some deranged individual who accepts that belief system, it becomes, you know, very easy for them to, you know, start treating those people, you know, with disrespect and with, you know, threatening manner and possibly even violence. And the fact that they're living in these insular communities where they cut their members off from all types of information, whether it's the news or whether it's just information that's out there for them to better themselves and educate themselves, the, you know, charismatic leader of the group controls all the information. So it's it creates, you know, a level of paranoia and manipulation and things like that that could drive people towards violence.
Let me ask about the posse comitatus. When I moved to Cottonwood in the 80s, there was monthly meetings of the posse comitatus at a restaurant in Cottonwood, Arizona. Is this group still active?
Well, the Posse Comitatus as an organization pretty much faltered back in the 1980s when we had these standoffs with, like, Gordon Call and others, and law enforcement dismantled the group.
What was your beef?
But its belief system, okay, this Posse belief system in the county level of government being the most supreme, and that the federal and state governments are illegal, that continues to survive and is manifested in today's sovereign citizen movement.
I see.
And we have, the target of some of these groups, and we've seen, they seem to try to infiltrate the military where they have people who are trained. They seem to try to infiltrate law enforcement. There's a fellow that runs around here who tries to gather sheriffs and claims sheriffs are, he kind of waffles back and forth, but he basically claims sheriffs are the highest law enforcement officers. That are legal. There was legislation, I believe it was in Montana or Wyoming, that I don't think it finally passed, but it was would require anybody, so if somebody is arrested in your county, you have to clear it with the sheriff, even, you know, before you can, you know, if a guy's a child molester, you got to talk to the sheriff, and the sheriff would have a veto over who would be arrested. So there are fellows running around, and they're calling in people who are law enforcement, former law enforcement, and what's striking is the number of sheriffs and sheriff deputies and law enforcement people who attend these extremist seminars and lectures. Are they doing anything illegal, or is that just part of, you know, being Americans?
Well, they're not doing anything illegal, but I do believe that, emphasizing these types of things, these anti-federalists, mentality, you know, not respecting federal law enforcement's role in helping the states and local law enforcement and fulfilling their mission. I think that is somewhat subversive, and we need to be aware that these, you know, individuals may have other agendas attached to those types of statements. So they have a right to say those things, but we also have a right as individuals and as voters to be aware of, you know, people going around and having these types of attitudes towards the federal government. And I think that we should counter those people's voices either through, you know, attending the meetings and speaking up or through the ballot.
I know that when I was growing up in Oklahoma and you had people making racist remarks, that the minute somebody didn't join in, and in Oklahoma, people are very, you know, I watched my dad, somebody would make a racist remark, and he just wouldn't say anything. He wouldn't respond. And that took a lot of the energy out of it. And so I think when people make really extreme political statements, if people will just, you know, kindly disagree with them, if we can stop the spread of wild rumors and hysteria just by individuals speaking up, or just not agreeing, so that the person is trying to spread some kind of really extreme point of view, and they come up with somebody who just doesn't agree with them, and you can do that kind of by just not agreeing with them, or by doing it. What?
Or ask them for their source of information. A lot of these people get their information from very questionable sources, and just by challenging the validity of their statement could be enough for other people to question it.
You mean everything on the internet's not true, Daryl?
That's right.
I'm always told when I question sources, it's either a major news organization, Fox News, where they heard it,
or
they saw it on the internet. I said, "Where did you ever hear that?" You know, and it'll be, "I heard it on the internet." And on the internet, there are lots of things, folks. And I think Daryl would tell you that you. How do you deal with that, Daryl? You got a guy who's going around on the internet looking for stuff, and he runs into these extremist websites that just make up stuff.
I wish they would come up with some sort of way to, I guess, give a reader or somebody, a user, some sort sort of tip in knowing, you know, that this is not a credible source of information, sort of like a better housekeeping seal of approval or Better Business Bureau. You know, I wish we could do something like that.
Actually, yeah, I think you just suggested an excellent business for somebody to...
Mike's looking for a way to make a little extra money here.
Exactly.
Gary? Many of the most vile websites and newsletters that I've ever been exposed to tend to come from retired colonels and majors and generals. Is that just my imagination, or is that kind of the preponderance of the stuff out there?
Well, unfortunately, we have people that have these types of backgrounds, and they try to use their former, you know, positions, either in the police or in the military community, to add legitimacy to the nonsense that they're talking about. And, you know, that was one of the things that we kind of got beat up over with the right-wing extremism report from 2009, was a couple of statements that we had made about the vulnerability of our military veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan to some of these extremist recruitment efforts. We weren't saying that the military members themselves were extremists, but that given the fact that they're coming back and trying to reacclimate into society and they may not be able to find a job, that they may become easy prey to recruitment efforts by these groups. And we had plenty of evidence where these groups had stated in their forums and chat rooms and on the internet that they wanted to target these military veterans.
Wow, that's interesting that they were targeted. We have a little bit of time. I want to make sure before we run out of time, I want to talk about dtanalytics.org, your website that talks about everything we're talking about this morning and more. This show, as well as our last show, is on vvid.org, our website, where you can get all our podcasts. Because, as usual, we talked about a lot of information this morning, a lot of heavy content. And Daryl, you're going to tell us the name of your book so I don't screw it up.
Okay. It's Right Wing Resurgence: How a Domestic Terrorist Threat is Being Ignored. And that subtitle is directed specifically at the Department of Homeland Security, as well as our own Congress, who have really failed to hold hearings on this phenomenon that's happened for the past 4 years. We had our first hearing right in the immediate aftermath of the Sikh temple shooting up in Wisconsin, but there needs to be more hearings about this and how we can counter it.
That would be the first step to acknowledging the threat. I guess, and we, you know, as part of the federal government, you can see that some of us. That's a wonderful idea. You know, start with the hearings. Let's investigate these groups or these movements and find out what might be going on and what kind of threat is out there. As you pointed out, we're very good at recognizing the external threat, or at least acknowledging it and reporting it and all the things that we do on to worry about Islamic-based terrorism. But in this particular case, your expertise is non-Islamic, domestic threats to our security.
I think it's important, folks, out there that we just talk about these things, that we at least get it out. And so when Daryl's group, an intelligence group in the Department of Homeland Security, puts out a report and it gets just shut down and they break apart the group that's monitoring this stuff, so if the Department of Homeland Security is not doing it, it's good for us to at least discuss these issues, like what's the line between somebody who is a danger to us, the line between free speech and people who go and kill a bunch of other people.
Exactly.
Next week, we're going to have a round table again like we sometimes do. We'll be discussing this last year in politics. We'll be discussing the fiscal cliff, but you'll get our summary of the year.
Are we going to give any awards for, like, biggest lie of the year?
You can if you want to.
Biggest right-wing lie or left-wing lie, maybe?
And then next month, we're going to have Mikey Weinstein from the Military Freedom Foundation and Juan Cole from Informed Comment, who's one of the major bloggers about international affairs on the Internet. Thank you for joining us. Merry Christmas, and we'll see you next Monday, right before New Year's, we'll be talking about something, right?
Merry Christmas to you all.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.